From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, the 7th day of November 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets. Dan Zwicker will be here from CGB Enterprises. He's out of Mandeville, Louisiana. And we'll discuss the cash grain markets with Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. As we close out the program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora, T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, and along the way today, Lisa Braltz will be here with her In My Backyard series. And it all happens right here on the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. On this Thursday afternoon, futures in the wheat pit were lower for the December contract, down a quarter at $6.53, but the July futures gained a day at $6.68¾, up 1½ cents. For the soft red, hard red July at $7.06¾, down 2¼. December corn, $4.20½, down 3/4. The March unchanged at $4.31½, and May at $4.40, up 0½ cent. July futures, $4.46¾, a quarter higher. September corn of next year at $4.52¾ unchanged. December 2014 in the corn pit down a half at $4.61¼. November beans for the day, $12.78¾, up 15¾. January, $12.66½, 11½ cents higher. The March futures, $12.48, up 7½. And the May soybeans, $12.34¼, up 2¾. July futures, $12.30¼. Up 1¾ for the day. November beans, $11.47½ for next year, down 2¾. Bean meal at $4.03.80, finished up 70, and bean oil at $40.74, down 40 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures at the CME Group finished the December at $131.67½, down 35. February's were 35 cents lower as well, finished up at $133.55 on a settlement price. November feeder cattle at $164.62½, were down 22½. January off 42½ at $165.12½, and lean hogs finished the December contract at $87.55 on a Thursday afternoon, up 20 cents per 100 pounds. The February's up 52½ at $91.40. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. The address again, willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, December contract, $94.36 a barrel. That's down 44 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $2.50 6/10. That's down 4 1/10 of a cent. By the way, here in Urbana-Champaign area, you can find gasoline for less than $3 a gallon now. RBOB gasoline to ethanol spread is trading at 87 1/10 of a cent wide. That's down 6 9/10 from yesterday afternoon. And ethanol futures at $1.63½ are up 2 8/10 of a cent. Natural gas at $3.51 7/10, a penny and 9/10 higher. Diesel fuel at $2.84 2/10. That's down 2 7/10 of a cent. Gold futures trading $1,308.50 an ounce, down $9.30. The U.S. dollar at 80.77. That's up 0.28 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, a high of just 47 degrees on a west wind at 15 miles an hour. It'll stay clear through the evening with a low of 28. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies for Friday, a high near 51. Light and variable winds, and then partly cloudy on Friday evening with a low of 39 degrees. Saturday, mostly sunny and 59. Should feel really good if it's bright and sunshiny. Saturday evening, clear and 36. Sunny skies on Sunday with a high of 52, and Sunday night, partly cloudy and 36. Veterans Day, Monday, mostly sunny skies and 54. Monday evening, cloudy and 36. And on Tuesday, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, a high near 44 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather. That's in Chicago, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the closing market report for a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises is on the phone line. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Was your gasoline there as cheap as it is here?
Oh, yeah. We don't have the taxes that you have. Yeah, we're down under an $8.290, I think. We probably got 10 cents less tax or whatever. I don't know. But, yeah, we've been down underneath $3 for a while. And, I kind of like that. That's Texas gold. You know, that's all coming out of the Eagle Ford, shale fracking down in the south of San Antonio and then the Permian Basin out of Midland, Texas. So, Texas is, bringing in the dough on this gasoline. And, I don't even think we're probably importing anything from the Middle East anymore. It's all coming out of the U.S., and Canada. And, of course, a big reason is, of course, the economy slowing down. You got less people driving and whatnot, and people have better, more fuel-efficient automobiles. But it's nice to not have to spend so much money at the gas pump.
Well, it makes a difference. And it's making a difference, I think, worldwide on the energy markets and how things are traded and distribution. And I don't know. I guess we're looking into Congress and talking about the RFS, too. Well, discuss that more in the coming weeks, I know, but it's an interesting happening. And then, of course, tomorrow we get to find out how much corn there might be available to grind for all kinds of things, including ethanol production. But it won't be a small amount, will it?
No. The trade's kind of worked in $14 billion. Now, the question is it $14.2 or $14.3 or $14.1? And, you know, I guess I just don't know how aggressive USDA will get on their yields. I mean, there is no doubt about it. There's been a steady diet of 200 bushel plus corn all over the Corn Belt. So it does kind of, you know, at least argue for something in the 160 plus range. And then, of course, the next floating object or moving object is actual harvested acres and how much there's any, how much adjustment there is to that, if there are any. I think there's room for some pretty good adjustments on the downside on acreage, but whatever the end of the day is, it's going to be a pretty big crop. But on the flip side of that, demand has improved, or demand prospects have improved significantly, I think, since the September report. We sold 1.7 million tons of corn here last week. USDA's got corn exports at, I think, 1225. My sources around the world tell me that we're probably going to go to 1.5 or better before the year's out. I think you got to look at feed usage going up a couple hundred or maybe 300 million. And I think depending upon how ethanol profits turn out, there's reason to believe that you could have a more ethanol grind. So, you know,
That's about 700 million bushel.
And that whacks at that big 2.3 billion bushel carryout that everybody wants to talk about.
That puts you down at a 1.5 for a carryout, doesn't it, or something?
Well,
like
well,
that.
What happens if you know, the crop comes in at 14 billion and
well, even at 14.2.
And then we, you know, but I don't think USDA will make all those demand changes at once. That'll be a gradual situation. But, you know, the old trader's axiom is, you know, you always want to store a big crop or a long crop. And basically the reasoning behind it is the low prices and the big crop will, increase demand. So then, toward the end of the marketing year, prices will be higher. Now, whether or not that'll be the case this year or not, I don't know. But, I mean, that's what it's shaping up to be. anyway, is that demand has really picked up in 30 days, and you know, you're hearing people shifting, producers shifting corn acres to soybean acres in Brazil. So Brazil's going to end up with about 500 million bushels less corn to export, which spells well for our exports further down the road. But the flip side of that, it spells potential trouble for soybeans. If South America goes ahead and has a good crop. Now we sold another million tons of soybeans this past week, so we're up to 90% of what USDA's got projected on that September report. So again, I think you'll see USDA bump that up. I think it could go all the way to 1.5, but probably not tomorrow. They're going to have to bump up crush because of feed usage. I think crush export demand will go higher. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, all these big numbers might end up being gobbled up by increased demand, and the report might be, you know, there'll be nothing wildly bullish in it, but I think the surprise is probably maybe on the bullish side because the trade is so bearish as corn.
On that, I think I will let you go, and we'll look forward to the 11 o'clock release tomorrow. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's out of Mandeville, Louisiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Speaking of the report, if you've gotten a link to our newsletter, then that's probably already in your email already. Don't forget that you can find all the numbers on our website under USDA Reports heading at willag.org, and that you can follow me on Twitter at Commodity Week. I'll try at 11 o'clock to post those numbers as quickly as possible.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, just a few moments, not very much longer than that, before I came on the air, Senator Dick Durbin from the state of Illinois released a commentary of sorts about the farm bill that'll be discussed in Washington, D.C. all this month. I'm going to run that for you and then tell you just a bit about a brand new faculty member we have here in the College of ACES, or Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. I interviewed Jonathan Coppas earlier today, and next week you can meet him at the Farm Markets Conference. You'll find all that information on our WillAg website, too. But Jonathan is something to listen to. He's really good. He's worth going to the conference on his own. Register for the conference on our website. Here's Durbin on the Farm Bill.
It's hard for many people to understand why there's been a dramatic increase in the number of people who are eligible for food stamps, what's known as the SNAP program these days. But if you take a close look, it's easy to understand. A lot of people lost jobs during our recession. Some took another job that didn't pay quite as much, or they might be working part-time. Or, in fact, they could end up in a position in life where they're just not earning enough to keep food on the table. At that point, the SNAP program steps in and gives a helping hand to a lot of people across America. Some 48 million receive a helping hand through the food stamp or the SNAP program. In Illinois, over 2 million. Well, just who are these people? Almost half of them are children. That's right, kids that live in a household that just doesn't have enough food to feed them. You're going to find another million nationwide who are veterans who've served our country and are struggling to put food on the table. You're also going to find a lot of the elderly and disabled. That's why we have to understand that this food stamp program is not just another government program. It's really one of the basics in life as to whether individuals have the food that they need. I just cannot understand why the House Republicans have decided that in the vast expanse of the federal expenditures, they're going to focus on cutting food stamps as their highest priority. They've stopped the farm bill for two straight years, a bipartisan bill that passed the Senate. They can't pass in the House because they want to make dramatic cuts when it comes to food stamps and the SNAP program. I don't think that's right. Let's make sure we don't waste a penny in that program, do everything we can to avoid it. But let's not make the first line of cutting to save money children in America without enough food on the table. We can make certain that the food stamp program is better administered, better run, but let's make sure that it's there for the people who truly need it.
That, of course, was U.S. Senator Dick Durbin from the great state of Illinois talking about the fight that has been battling in Washington, D.C. for the last 3 years. And then, of course, the SNAP program and the Farm Bill and the farm programs directly. You can listen to more about that on our website at Will Ag. I'll try to get the video from Durbin up there. And then also a video from Jonathan Kappas, who you can listen to next week at the Farm Markets Conference that's sponsored by TIA CREF and is a University of Illinois function. All of it right there on our website. Make sure that you go and find out more about it at willag.org. The Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, inviting you to visit our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Once there, in the right-hand side, hit the Outlook Meetings calendar link, and you'll find a whole series of things that are happening beginning in December with the Ag Masters program. That's the second and third. It's sponsored by U of I Extension. A lot of classroom work over a day and a half period. It's really detailed crop sciences. If you're interested, read about it on our webpage at willag.org in the Outlook Meetings calendar, and you can also find a way to register there. On December the 10th, you'll find that we'll have a meeting in Mount Vernon. That's sponsored by Farm Credit Services. Matt Bennett and Sherm Newland, along with Gary Schnutke, will be in Mount Vernon on the evening of December the 10th. And then on the 11th, we'll head over to Sikeston, Missouri, to the Minear Convention Center. This one is the regional corn meeting, sponsored by Missouri University Extension. John Bondurant, Jackie Vakes, and Dan Zwicker will be on hand. And then the following week, I'll go on the road with the Farm Economic Summit meetings. They'll start out right here in Champaign on the 16th. We'll move to Sycamore and Galesburg, Mount Vernon, and Bloomington all that week, beginning December the 16th. That's the Farm Doc team, the Ag Economist from the U of I. We go on the road with the 2013 edition of the Illinois Farm Economic Summit meetings the week of the 16th of December. You can find the details on our website at willag.org. Just look in the Outlook Meetings section. Now, coming up next, Lisa Braltz muses about kitchens and her latest edition of In My Backyard.
Recently, I heard a piece on the radio about how the luxury home market was becoming more modest, how some buyers with big money are moving towards smaller houses of, say, 5,000 to 7,000 square feet as opposed to 10,000 square feet or more. Despite this downsizing, said the journalist, some builders are stopping at nothing to provide their clients with hand-carved bathtubs and antique black oak floors. Of course, my mind turned immediately to the kitchens in these homes, even though kitchens never came up. And then I thought about my own kitchen, and I felt, briefly, a twinge of envy. I live in a very small house compared with the houses in the radio piece, and the kitchen is, well, tiny. It's a galley kitchen, longer than it is wide, and we refer to it somewhat fondly as a two-butt kitchen, meaning two people can work together there somewhat comfortably. It is not the type of kitchen where people not cooking can just hang out, watching and chatting over cups of tea, because they'll be seriously in the way. Instead of granite countertops, a state-of-the-art dishwasher, and artisan-crafted fixtures, my kitchen offers two very cool pull-out counters, human dishwashing power, and finicky appliances that were probably installed at the same time as the house's first television set. Despite these quirks, I'm still quite fond of it. I wondered, though, how my friends felt about their kitchens. So I turned to Facebook and asked, "What do you love about your kitchen? What don't you love? What was the last great meal you created in your kitchen?" These simple questions yielded over 60 responses from my friends, all of them eager to share their kitchen highs and lows. Several kitchens had been remodeled, but many others had not. Some were kitchens in rented apartments or houses. And just so you know, there's a plethora of older homes out there with nicely appointed but weirdly configured kitchens. My friend Eve, whose kitchen is large and who, with her husband Eric, turns out delicious fried chicken on the regular, suffers with a carpeted kitchen. It's okay, Eve. My kitchen had carpet, too. Erica deals with a very narrow kitchen, like mine, but loves her double sink. Sue, one of the best home cooks I know, has to keep most of her appliances in the basement, she says. And, much more sobering, my friend Lauren recently lost her kitchen and home in a fire. Kitchens, the space dedicated in our homes to the preparation of food at least 3 times a day if we're lucky, whether it's a piece of bread popped into a toaster or a full-on Thanksgiving meal, are emotionally charged rooms. Steeping as we are in an aspirational culture that at one time was mostly magazine-driven, images of so-called desirable and often huge kitchens are now everywhere, whether they're right in front of us or conjured up while listening to radio pieces. I've come to see kitchens like I do gardens. Big and showy are nice, but beautiful food often comes out of small locations. The careful, respectful intimacy we can develop with food-creating spaces like gardens and kitchens is what really counts. I know people with immense kitchens who rarely cook. I also know people like my friend Anna, who cooks large meals from scratch more often than is reasonable, she says, for a kitchen of the size she has. I have found the space will do what you ask of it. It will provide. The previous owners of our house, which was built in the 1930s, were named Jay and Hazel. I assume Hazel was a small woman because the counters are short. This can be a huge trial for a family like mine, where every one of us is either approaching or past 6 feet tall. But the man who sold us the house told us a story that stayed with me for the almost 8 years we've lived here. Jay and Hazel shared their lunch together every day in our kitchen, sitting together at one of the pullout counters that I usually just pile high with dirty dishes to be washed. Maybe that guy was just trying to sell me a house, I don't know. But the idea of Jay and Hazel, people we never met, connecting every day over lunch in that tiny kitchen, struck me and stayed with me. Many meals were prepared there, many were shared there, and my family is keeping the thread going, aging, appliances, and all. May you do the same as well, no matter where you cook. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks go to Lisa Braltz for her In My Backyard series. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. Let's check in on the cash grain market now. Matt Bennett from TGM is on the phone line. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. How are you today?
I'm great, Todd. How are you?
Everybody all done shucking corn and putting things away, or just a few left hanging around?
There's still a couple left that are, some of the replant stuff and guys. Some stubble beans here and there and whatnot. We're actually getting a little bit of corn in out of the field today. So, there's still a few guys going. You get south of us, there's quite a few, actually.
Hey, you feeling better or worse about the price of corn, despite the fact we have tomorrow's report coming up?
Oh, I don't know, Todd. I think it's been a slow grind here lower lately, and obviously a lot of guys are kind of feeling like, well, maybe I shouldn't have stored so much, and I've had several guys come in this week, maybe get a little coverage before the report, but, how do I feel about the price? I guess I don't feel like we're going to go sharply one way or the other, tomorrow, unless we just get a really shocking report. It just seems like an awfully dead market, but you know how report days are. So
you betcha. Hey, what are your bids for the day?
409 on cash corn, 427 for next fall, 1264 on cash beans, and 1113 for next fall.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. We'll be back in just 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Bittersweet Chocolate with Almonds Day. The cultivation of seeds that produce chocolate date back at least 3 millennia to Central America and Mexico. The earliest documented use was around 1100 BC, with the Maya and Aztecs making bitter chocolate beverages. On this day in agricultural history in 1807, Tom Brassey was born. An early English railway contractor, he built railway lines worldwide. He laid tracks in England, France, the Netherlands, Italy, Prussia, Spain, Canada, India, Australia, and South America. In all, he built more than 6,500 miles of track. In 1872, the Mary Celeste sailed for Genoa from New York with a cargo of 1,700 barrels of alcoholic spirits. The ship was found abandoned near the Azores, the captain, his wife and daughter, and seven crewmen missing, and no sign of violence. The captain, his family, and the crew were never seen again. In 1923, Michael Joseph Owens died. He is credited with the invention of the automatic glass bottle-making machine. And in 1928, Norton David Zinder was born. An American biologist and molecular geneticist, he studied a species of salmonella and discovered how genetic material is transferred from one bacterial cell to another by the means of a virus. And that's this day in agricultural
history. Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us. It finally cleared off, and we have some bright, sunny skies. I suppose farmers would like it to stay that way for some time so they could finish up their harvesting, but I'm afraid that's not going to be the case. What are you seeing?
Well, we're not seeing a lot of rain or snow in the near term, so it does look pretty good as we go through the weekend and into at least the first few days of next week. We won't see any precipitation throughout that period, mainly dry weather, as a couple of storm systems pretty much stay up to the north. So conditions will gradually improve as we go forward. The only real issue is that a large portion of the central U.S., especially in key corn areas, received over three times its average rainfall over the last week. So to put that differently, most corn across the central U.S. has received 21 days worth of rain over the last 7 days, and even more than that. So it is going to take a little while for a lot of these areas to completely dry out, for harvesting to pick up quickly, which brings up an interesting question, and that is what happens after the next 5 days go by. And the weather pattern is very tricky to assess for the middle and end of next week. We do have a pattern change taking place not only across the United States next week, but across a large portion of North America. And whenever we get into these types of situations where we're moving from one pattern into the next, computer models generally have a real difficult time in telling us exactly what's going to happen. They just tell us that something big is going to happen. And there's a big debate going on right now with what that means. Several computer models turn the central U.S. unseasonably cold with high temperatures that would only be in the 20s across a big portion of the Corn Belt around a week from now. On the other hand, some other models keep temperatures in the 40s and 50s. We just don't have a lot of confidence in what's going to happen next week. But we do know that a major storm system is not imminent next week, which is important, because there's a decent chance that we should be able to keep on harvesting all the way through the at least the middle of next week from what we're seeing right now.
Turn your attention to other parts of the world. How is the planting condition in South America?
Well, we have an interesting situation that's developing in Argentina. Around 1 month ago, it was unseasonably dry across that country, and that was limiting corn planting. Since then, it's rained fairly heavily over the last month, and we're looking for another round of very heavy rainfall this weekend in the key corn and soybean areas, for that matter, of Argentina. We think that's going to stop planting this weekend, and they're already a little bit behind. Another situation develops later next week across Argentina as another cold front sweeps onto the north, and what that will do is trigger more thunderstorms. So at this point, conditions for planting are deteriorating across Argentina, but not because it was dry, which was the reason a month ago, but because it's turning a little bit too wet. So the forecasts for Argentina are turning more important, and we'll just have to watch that and see what it looks like over the next 1 to 2 weeks. That's something that we're definitely following. In Brazil, though, things are looking really nice for planting. We're seeing periods of dry weather with periods of rain every 5 days, and that's pretty much an ideal situation for planting corn and soybeans, and the same thing for Paraguay. So right now, things are looking good in Brazil and Paraguay, and not so good in Argentina.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Tenora, of course, is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.